the best coaches in the game. We really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block, helmets casket is out. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision, we got...
Welcome back to the DFS Army Bowl Call Podcast. I'm Alan Soslowski here along with DFS Army favorite Mark Stopa. What's up, Stopa?
Hi, man. How you doing? I'm good.
Good. For those of you who have been longtime followers of the DFS Army Podcast, you know we had Mark on last year. In addition to all of his amazing football takes, which we're going to get into today, he thinks about things a little differently. In his book, People v. Money, he kind of sees where the puck is going rather than where it's been. And all of that ability to see things for what they really are and kind of strategize translates into fantasy football. Is that a fair statement, Mark?
Absolutely. I love the way you describe that. It's all about seeing where things are going, not where they've been.
Right. And that is, and that I think really, because everyone has the same access to the same fantasy football information nowadays. It's really just parsing it out and developing an edge and a strategy. So let's just go right into it. Let's just start with the basics. I know every format's different, but how would you describe your overall fantasy football draft strategy just for traditional leagues to start off?
Well, generally speaking, I'd say fantasy football for me is a bit like sex. All variations of it are great. There's no such thing as bad, right? But you can have like the missionary sex that's scheduled at 8 p.m. on Saturdays. That's what I'd consider like your one QB draft that most people do.
Like, well, a snake. You're talking about like a snake draft.
Sure, a snake draft. Sure. I like the, you know, swinging from the chandelier, bring out the funky stuff. That's an auction with a super flex. So much better. So much more fun. It adds so many dimensions. So I'd encourage everybody, as you're forming those home leagues this year, to, you know, just incorporate more. Add a flex, add a super flex, do an auction style. And for your waiver wire, make it FAAB and not waiver priority based on who's in last place or something like that. So much more competitive, so much more fun.
Okay, so anyone watching fantasy football content right now, they're hardcore players. So let's just, for those who already know what a super flex is, just hang on for 1 second there. But a super flex is basically an additional active roster spot where you could start a second QB if you wanted to, versus your traditional flex leagues where it's a running back, wide receiver, tight end. Okay, we covered that. And just let's just talk basic missionary, as you put it, regular draft strategy for a moment. But super flex. So we've had a lot of questions in the DFS Army chat recently and asking super flex strategy. So we're going to start there. Not auction, snake draft, super flex strategy. So, I mean, quarterbacks obviously are more valued than, you know, the regular running back skill positions. So what would be the advice that you would give people for super flex strategy when you're going to basically start two quarterbacks in a traditional league?
Well, you've got to view it like you have to get two viable weekly starters, maybe three, depending on the strength of your second quarterback. The top five quarterbacks, the tier one guys, are all going to go in the first round. So you've got to plan for that. And then, you know, you just got to have two viable starters, because you can't stream in a super flex. You can't stream quarterbacks like you can in a one quarterback league. They're all going to be taken. Even some backups will be taken. So you've got to be able to have two guys who you can count on for the course of the year, and arguably three if your second guy's a little weak or has some question marks.
Yeah, I would actually say three is you need to have three, because injuries happen. And if you don't have one of those locked and loaded, I mean, how many locked and loaded starters that you can count on every week are there? I only count about seven, maybe eight. All right, you want to go through them?
Sure. All got your tier one guys, the Mahomes, Allen, Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson.
Five.
Those should all be top first round picks in a super flex. Then you've got Russell Wilson, Justin Hebert, Aaron Rodgers. This feels like a quiz now. Tom Brady.
Stafford.
Tom Brady, Stafford, Joe Burrow, Ryan Tannehill, you know, those are in like the next tier. Those Matt Ryan, those are all, you know, in a super flex format. Those are guys who, if you draft them, you're playing them every week. You're not streaming. You're not even thinking about that. And it, to me, if those are your second quarterback guys, somebody like that, and then you also get into the upside guys like the Trey Lances and the Justin Fields and those kind of guys. If you're getting the first group there, the Tannehill group, the Staffords, if that's your second quarterback, you don't really need the third one, I would say, because you've already invested a lot of draft capital on quarterback at that point. But if your second guy is more like a Lance or a Justin Fields, you might need a third quarterback later on down the line.
Yeah. So if you have a top six, so in a traditional league, you know, we see the first 10 of 14 picks. So meaning like, you know, past the 1-2 turn is usually you're having 10 running backs, two receivers, and Travis Kelce. That's kind of ADP-ish. How many quarterbacks do you think will go in the first round of a super flex league if somebody's playing in it for the first time and they're playing with, a group of people that may have had experience before? So who are the guys that are definitely locked and loaded? Is it just that top five?
Definitely, or that first five. To me, that's very clear that those are first round worthy picks in a super flex draft. Those top five guys. Mahomes could be as soon as one, certainly by two or three. Allen is right there shortly after that. And then your preference on Kyler Murray, Lamar, and Dak after that. But those are all first round caliber guys.
Yeah. So if you're watching right now, I see we've got people pouring into the chat. So just make sure you comment and let us know who you think are the locked and loaded quarterbacks that belong in the first round of Superflex. All right. So also in that first round of your Superflex drafts, at what point do you think is the decision point to pivot away from the quarterbacks and take one of the elite running backs, the Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, or whoever you deem to be at the top? I mean, should you definitely start with a quarterback, or like, where's the spot where you're taking a running back?
Well, McCaffrey is probably 1.1, unless you want to go the safer route and take Mahomes, because he's just so much more valuable. If he stays healthy, he's just so much more valuable than anybody else is. And then Dalvin Cook is probably 1.2, or you could take Mahomes before him for similar reasons. So to me, that's pretty clear. That's how most super flex drafts tend to go, is the top three of McCaffrey, Mahomes, Cook, some variation thereof.
You know, what's funny is I was having a discussion with my wife, and she's a, you know, she's an avid fantasy football player, loves it. But she doesn't pay attention to all of the offseason ADP shifts. And she has the 1-1 in our super flex competitive draft. There's actually some good players in it. And she's like, why aren't I taking Josh Allen 1.1? I think I'm talking to the right guy about this. So I understand, well, obviously, why Mahomes is the 1-1, but is there a case? I mean, Josh Allen finished above him in fantasy scoring the last couple of years. Is Josh Allen a viable QB? Can he be ranked as the QB1, especially in Superflex?
Sure. I think that's perfectly reasonable. I'd say, as I'm wearing my Josh Allen jersey here.
Show that thing off. Let me flex up a little bit. That thing is a thing of beauty right there.
With my Bills jerseys in the background as well.
I love it.
So Allen is a little riskier than Mahomes in that he hasn't, you know, done it for a full season on the level that Mahomes has, except for last year. So in that sense, he's maybe a little riskier. But if you can get past that, he arguably has more upside because of the rushing touchdowns that he's been pretty bankable on, getting eight or so rushing touchdowns every year. That's a level that Mahomes just doesn't do. So, you know, it's certainly reasonable to say I'd prefer Allen than Mahomes if somebody wanted to do that.
Right. I mean, clearly the last two seasons, Mahomes has finished below Josh Allen in scoring. I think that, you know, and Mahomes has been banged up a little bit over the last couple of years, offensive line troubles, although they did seemingly fix those this year. So, yeah, I was a Mahomes at a 1.1 truther just because it was programmed in my head. But sometimes, you know, what is our friend in common, Chris Liss, always say? He talks about how The eyes of the beginner sees many possibilities, whereas the eyes of the expert only sees one. So when she said that to me, and not that she's a beginner, but it was like, oh, somebody that's just coming into this says, why the hell isn't Josh Allen 1.1? It kind of opened my eyes for it. All right. So in a traditional draft, okay, we're just going to go back because this is fantasy football season. Everybody wants to know. This is the most common question that I get. Where's the best place to pick? And I have my own opinions on this. And just talk about traditional leagues because that's who we do service. And we're going to get into auction. We're going to get into more super flex stuff and players you like. So stay tuned. If you're watching on the live stream, I'm here with Mark Stopa. He has some of the best player analysis that I enjoy. So where's your preferred place to draft in a traditional snake draft, beginning, middle, end?
Traditional snake draft, it's got to be 1.1 because you're getting the best player. You're getting the choice of the player pool right off the bat, and you're getting the best player in every odd numbered round after that. That's where I want to be if I've got the choice.
Yeah. I mean, but last year, 1.1 was a death sentence.
That's true. But the advantage that you get if McCaffrey hits is just so massive compared to anything else. 2019, he was, what, 7-8 points a game better than the next best running back. That's just a massive advantage. And on the way back, when you have McCaffrey on the way back, you can get two of those stud receivers like a DK Metcalf and Justin Jefferson or something like that. And those roster builds are just fantastic starting out from 1.1 because you take that stud running back, you draft as if he's going to work out, and then you can start filling your roster with the stud receivers at 2, 3, and 4, 5. Those are fantastic roster builds in a traditional snake draft setup.
Okay, so only one person in your league could have the 1.1. What happens after that? Let's say that you're doing one of those. A lot more people are doing this pick your own draft slot thing now, the KDS that the NFFC's had for years. So let's say the 1.1's off the board. Where's your net? Is it 1.2? Is that your
1.2, exactly, for the similar thought process. You know, you get Dalvin Cook, and he's potentially a massive advantage over anybody else. So, you know, there's a little bit of risk there, of course, but that's what I want to be able to do.
Yeah, funny enough, I have a different viewpoint on this. And, you know, my broadcasting partner, The Geek, he agrees with everything you just said. So I just want to give the counterpoint to that is that I like picking near the back. In fact, in the NFFC draft that I did, I know third round reversal does skew that a little bit. I chose the 12th spot. I like getting two top, my tier cutoff was 15. So I wanted a pick in the back in 10, 11, or 12 because I wanted two top 15 players. I think everything that you're saying is correct. Christian McCaffrey, if he has a 2019 season, it is a cheat code. That is interesting. Okay. Second round. So I think we mostly agree that we want...
You know, and I mostly agree with you there too, because actually, if you asked me, well, what would I want next? After 1.2, I do not want 1.3 because there's a lot of players after Cook that I think are really close, and I would rather be in the middle or back end of that first round if I didn't get 1.2. So what we're saying is not that far off from each other.
Right. You're just saying that there's such an advantage with Cook and McCaffrey that is its own strategy, but after that, then you come back to where I was.
Exactly. After that, I like the 1.8 or 9 or 10, and I'm looking at Zeke or Tyreek Hill, hoping that somebody like that's falling to me. I got a lot of those guys there. So, yeah, I'm mostly with you there.
Yeah, don't hold up much hope for Zeke. I've been talking to a bunch of people about this. He has quickly become the rock solid 1.4 for the non-Alvin Kamara. If Alvin Kamara goes first, Kamara goes first. I mean, you know what it is about Zeke? And I just had this discussion with somebody. It's that the guy never even shows up on the injury report. He may even have diminished skill at this point, but you cannot win your fantasy football draft in the first round, but you certainly could lose it. Zeke will not lose it for you.
And I just love the Dallas setup, as we'll talk about more. As I look at my most owned players, I have dozens of best ball drafts that I've already done, like 60. But my most commonly owned players are like five of the top 10 are Cowboys guys. So I'm all over that.
I don't mean to flex on you here, but I remember when 60 best balls was outrageous. Now, it's still more than I've done this season. I'll give you that. So you do have me beat. I'm at 38. So you've crushed me. But don't you remember when someone would say I did 60 best balls? It was nuts. But now it's just like, it's almost like we think of it like a DFS lineup. Like there's people that do 150 in a week.
Yeah. It's to me, if I have 8 or 9 going at once, that's a lot. So That's about what I like doing.
Are you a big dynasty player? Do you play in multiple dynasty leagues, or do you just have one or zero?
You know, I like seasonal for football. Mm-hmm. NFL to me, you know, there's so much, like, what I don't like about the dynasty is this dynamic of winning now versus winning later, and I just prefer seasonal for fantasy.
Okay, yeah. To me, what that says is the next time I need someone for one of our startups, I'm definitely calling you, because we always need a few people that hate dynasty that come in. I think one of the best parts about it, and we'll just keep moving on with our discussion, is that I love dynasty because it's a year round. I mean, the whole purpose of fantasy football, other than loving football, other than doing it to show that we were right on our guys. I mean, I think you could agree, is the communal thing, is the interaction with the people that you meet, and, you know, just having something in common. And what's cool about Dynasty, all our group chats go, for most of them, go all year round. So, and, you know, it doesn't matter the time of year, we're sitting there goofing on each other and which players are great. So,
that's irreplaceable. I agree with that.
Yeah. So that's, again, I'm sure you have friends and colleagues that you only talk to because of fantasy football.
Oh, absolutely. Some of my best friends, that's all we talk about, and we're great friends. So I love that.
It is kind of weird, like, you know, because we're in this world of fantasy football and, you know, we always talk about it, but I forget, like, when I talk to some of my other colleagues and friends outside, like, it's just kind of like a thing they do. They're like, oh my God, you talk about this all year round. That's so weird. Yeah. So, all right, draft strategy, because that's what people want to know about. All right. So first round, we want one of those anchor running backs. Let's go back to our traditional league. Where's the point? Give me the where you're pivoting off of. Are you a Travis Kelce in the first round draft?
No, I have a lot of Tyreek Hill in the first round, but okay. Kelce has gotten to where he scares me a little bit just based on age. And I understand he hasn't shown any signs of drop off, but I have a little concern that, you know, he's the same age as Gronk, essentially, who everyone views as old. So, I'd rather go first elsewhere with my first pick.
Whenever I draft it, well, I have done drafts. I've done best ball drafts when I have a tight end in the first round. And I always feel like I'm doing a little game of catch up. That's, you know, I feel like I'm chasing the draft rather than dictating where the draft goes. And, you know, last year, listen, if you drafted Travis Kelce in the first round, it was basically a ticket to the top two, top three finish. So, all right, second round. So, oh, sorry, I asked you a question. Where's the point where you're pivoting off of the running backs, and to which receivers do you think are first round viable this year?
You know, I'm doing that as soon as after 1.2, because after Cook, to me, you know, you got to start thinking potentially about running backs. I like hit to me, Hill, Diggs, and Devontae Adams are all first round viable. And certainly if they get into the early second round, then those are guys that I'm targeting or early second.
Where are you at as of, you know, we're live streaming here in August. I am, are there running backs that have been going, because you've been doing best balls all off season, you know, Aaron Jones, Antonio Gibson, those have been second round running backs, mid second round, you know, they're getting pushed up now with, we lost Cam Akers. There's been a few other running back attrition stories. So where are you on those guys? Are those first round running backs, either one of those guys for you?
Not Gibson. I've taken some Jones at the 1-2 turn, especially if I could pair him with Adams and get a little bit of a Packer stack in a classic best ball format. I like that early build. But not in the first round for me, especially on Gibson.
Yeah, I'm a Gibson at the turn person, but I would take him at 10 if I knew that, you know, a league mate of mine at the 11-12 would probably take him. He didn't hold up under the beating last year, but if there's no one that's going to be surprised if Gibson's a top five, top three running back this year. It's interesting to see. I'm him and DeAndre Swift are the other ones that I like. The market likes Gibson, but where are you on DeAndre Swift? I have him solidly in the first round. Obviously, you don't need to take him until the early third round. So that's a very big gap to where I'm at, to where the market's at. So I'd be curious your DeAndre Swift thoughts.
You know, I'm more aligned with your podcast friend Adam Schefter here in the school that Jamal Williams there bothers me. The Detroit just setup in general bothers me. They just don't seem like they're going to be very good, and Swift is not somebody who I own much of at all here. So we'll have to disagree on that one. I fear there's too much that could go wrong there. I feel like Detroit could be in contention for first overall draft pick. So Swift isn't somebody I'm looking to target.
Yeah, and what Mark Stolpa was referring to is that recently we had Adam Schefter on the RotoWire podcast, and I'll even link it in the description here. So if anyone watching this in the post, you can check it out. Thanks for the plug there. Now, the thing, and again, I don't want to get too caught up on Swift because you know I'm on an island. I'm always fighting everybody. You're being polite to me. Most people just tell me I'm an idiot on that one. But I just feel like no matter what the situation is, if they are the worst team in the league, if they're trailing, if they're up, DeAndre Swift is going to get his. If you told me the under over for catches for him was 75, I would take the over. But it's, you know, I understand all the counterpoints. They're all valid, and I could see the case against. What's great, though, is that I don't have to pay a first-rounder for him. If I'm picking up,
here's my biggest counterpoint there. At the time that you're drafting him, I'm drafting DK Metcalf, Calvin Ridley, Justin Jefferson, that stud tier of receivers that to me have a lot fewer questions about them than somebody like Swift does. I'm excited when I see somebody taking Swift in the second round in my best ball formats, because that means that those receivers are slipping to me, and that's how I want to be building my lineups with that tier of receivers that kind of ends with AJ Brown. I really want one of those guys in the second round.
I agree with everything you said, which is why I just, you know, is that I don't have to take Swift in the second round. I mean, I literally could be sitting in the first five picks of the third round and he comes to me. You know, I mean, it's just the market agrees with you. Similar way that they have pushed Miles Sanders out of sometimes even out of the third round now. So I don't know if you remember, what was it, 2018 or 19 that those guys were rookies? I'm just trying to think back, right? What was that rookie class with Sanders, Jacobs, and Montgomery? It keeps slipping my mind.
That's 19,
I think. 19, right? Because this is their third year, right? Yeah. Okay, so right. Isn't it amazing? I was talking about this on a podcast the other day about Jacobs was the 1-1 consensus rookie in that class. We had Montgomery and Miles Sanders. Sanders was the consensus 2 for the most part, but not many people. I'm sure some did have Montgomery up there. Those three guys are nowhere to be found in the top three rounds. Where's your are those guys are? Are those running back? So you said you like to take receivers. This is tying back to what I wanted to ask you before. So are those players that you're interested in? I know we're going to get into your specific love hates, but where are you on the 2019 running back class?
I'm all out on all those guys. To me, those are very similar setups. The Raiders look to me like a train wreck, terrible offensive line. They bring in Kenyon Drake, pay him a bunch of money too. Raiders are set up to be bad. The splits that Jacobs has when the Raiders win games versus when they lose games are very pronounced. So when Drake is the passing back, I just don't want Jacobs. I'm drafting guys like Keenan Allen and Terry McLaurin as my third round. Amari Cooper, C.D. Lamb, those are my go-to third-round guys. There's the two Cowboy studs, McLaurin and Keenan Allen. That's what I want in round three. You can have all the Sanders, all the Jacobs. I don't want any part of that because I just feel very comfortable that those receivers are going to hit, and I don't know what's going to happen with those running backs. Sanders, too, he's got all sorts of competition now in the pass-catching role, and I want no part of that stuff.
So what I'm hearing from you is what I hear, you know, from a lot of sharp fantasy football players. Okay. If they don't get one of the running backs they like in the first round, they're going to pivot to wide receiver. In the second round, they're not taking DeAndre Swift. They're taking Calvin Ridley and Justin Jefferson, all those receivers. In the third round, you're not taking David Montgomery. You're taking more receivers. If this is the strategy that you follow, where are you getting running back production from?
I have a lot of zero RB builds. And I just kind of find it along the way. Like I have a lot of Zach Moss in round 8 or 9. I think it's very possible that he scores 8 or 9 touchdowns. I have a lot of AJ Dillon. I think he's in a great situation now with Jamal Williams out of there to potentially score 8 or 9 touchdowns. I have a lot of Gus Edwards. I'm looking for guys like that in the later rounds in order to fill out my rosters and hope multiple of them, hoping that somebody hits where after I've stockpiled those stud receivers who I have very few questions about in the earlier rounds. Those are the roster builds that I like.
I finally found another Gus Edwards guy. I've been, you know, hanging around some of those guys like Liss and Jeff. They hate Gus Edwards. They don't hate him. They just don't see the case for him. They see, you know, with With Dobbins going to get most of the work and Lamar Jackson running. But I'm with you. I think Gus Edwards has some standalone weekly value. The reports have been really good on Zach Moss. His ADP is sure to solidify and move up around now. I mean, if you have any software on your phone, you get these blurbs. That's what I was talking about before. It's like, how do we find our edge in fantasy football when everybody's getting the same blurbs? You know, I'm in the middle of a dynasty trade with Michael Thomas, and a Michael Thomas ghosted the team for 3 months. Blurb comes up, and now I can't trade Michael Thomas. So let's go back a little bit off player talks. I know we're zigzagging a little bit, but where's the edge in fantasy football nowadays?
Sometimes the edge is in assuming that the market is wrong. For example, we mentioned Zach Moss. The price for him and Josh Allen assumes that Allen is going to have 8 or 9 or 10 rushing touchdowns like he has throughout the course of his career. Well, what if the $250-some million contract causes the Bills to not run him as much and Moss gets more of those red zone and goal line touches? I think that's certainly a plausible theory that the market is not accounting for at all in pricing both Allen and especially Moss, who can be had in round 9 in most of the best balls that I'm doing. So I have lots of zero RB bills with Moss in round 9. Because he could easily wind up being around 4 or 5 type value at the end of the season. So to me, edges are let's assume that the market is getting something wrong, because here's what one of the things that everybody underestimates is at the end of the year-end leaderboard is going to look nothing like ADP. It's like a random shuffle, right? So you have to kind of sometimes pick based upon what if the market's wrong here? And I try to do that sometimes.
Yeah, I think that I just want to underline something you said that was really important, because I love that. It's let's assume the market's wrong and the final board is going to look nothing like ADP. I mean, every year we're shocked. I mean, it's funny, like through 3 weeks, I can picture a scenario, even though I'm not making this bet, where Mike Davis is a top 3 running back through the first 3 weeks. I mean, you could totally see it, right? Even though he's one of those running backs that nobody wants, that nobody believes in, you know. But if I told you there was going to be a running back who finished as a top 12 running back the prior year, and he's available in the 5th round with nobody of note behind him, and just took away the names, and I told you would, of course I want that guy. But it's funny how, you know, certain running backs get this stink on them. You know, we call it the sticky cheese running backs. It's pretty interesting. All right. So you named a couple of those running backs that you like late, should you go for the wide receiver talent in the beginning. And I agree with you. When you go running back early, you are passing up better skilled players. And in best ball, I can understand it a little bit, because getting running backs with job security, there is a strategy, whether you agree with it or not, it is a strategy. I want to pivot now a little bit to auction. We've gotten so many questions on auction. I have to admit, you know, I am not I've done auctions. I've done them with you. I like them somewhat. If they don't take 100 years, you figured out how to make them pretty efficient with the leagues you're in. Let's just talk basic auction strategy for those thinking about doing it for the first time that have only done it a couple times. Give us the 101. Take your time. Explain what you think proper auction strategy, or what your strategy is.
Well, what I do before every auction is I spend a fair amount of time assessing the size of the player pool. How many teams are in the league? How many starting positions are on each team? So how many total players does everyone need to be starting each week? And then I'll have a printed out list by position to figure out, okay, this if it's you know, a super flex auction, then everybody's got to start 24 quarterbacks every week. So how deep does that take me in the player pool? Then I figure out and do that for each position. And then I figure out how much money auction money we've got, and try to figure out how much the top quarterback should be going for, how much the top running back should be going for, etc. And in the beginning of the auction, the key is to figure out if people are overspending or underspending, because there's a finite amount of money for a finite amount of spots. So are they overspending or underspending? And based on the answer to that, I'll decide how to allocate my auction money. And this is a process that frankly requires experience. So if you haven't done it before, then do a mock before you're doing it for real. But it's an extreme. It's so much fun because you have access to the entire player pool instead of just being slotted into a particular draft slot in a traditional snake draft. So, you know, if you can do that prep work to try to figure out, hey, the top running back should be going for $60, and when you get to the auctions, they're going in the 70s or 80s, then you know there's going to be money left over, and you just got to force yourself to be patient and not splurge there because you're going to get lots of deals in other places. That's my general strategy.
And you know what's funny is that we all have our guys that we like in, you know, in all types of drafts. What I found myself is in the auction drafts, if I get out of the my guys mindset and I just take the one, and I use your strategy before of fading the market and just taking the guys that no one else likes that I still think have a chance, that's when I seem to do better. I mean, if you think that Josh Jacobs is still a starting running back that has, you know, it's going to get 215, 220 carries, nobody wants Josh Jacobs. He goes in the fifth round of snake drafts. My assumption is he will go pretty inexpensive in a salary cap auction draft. So those are the type of players I generally like to get. I don't know, obviously, you know, my lack of experience in auction, I've yet to like kind of get into where I want to be. And I know a lot of people like just to get 2-3 stars and then just fill in with values. But yeah, I mean, there's something to be said, you know, if you're talking
about like missionary, man, that's okay. But you should try get her to swing from the chandeliers.
I agree with that. It's funny. All right. So end game. So when you're talking about auction, we're usually talking about like a $200 budget. So when we talk about in terms of $70, $80, just so you know, we're talking about a baseline of $200 budget. When you nominate players in an auction strategy, do you have a strategy for that? Like, who do you nominate first? Not specifically who, but what types of players do you tend to nominate early?
I mean, early, almost always the most expensive players get nominated early, as people spend most of their money in the beginning. There can be strategy to nominating players who you think are going to be expensive, who you don't want, to try to draw out auction money from other people. Sometimes a more advanced strategy is to nominate a $1 or $2 guy really early on to try to flesh that out and see where that might go, like especially for a $1 kicker or a $1 defense if you really want it and you don't want somebody else to nominate them first. But for the most part, I'd say it's nominating players you don't want, who you think are overhyped or going to be expensive, to draw out auction money from opponents.
Who are name two players like that that you think are overhyped, that people are going to spend money on that you don't want this year?
Julio Jones, don't want him. There's a long history of wide receivers who are his size, when they get to his age, starting to break down. I think we saw it last year. I don't want any part of Julio Jones. Also don't want any part of the Steelers receivers, even though I think that they're good individually. I don't like Ben. To me, Ben is done. The Steelers offensive line is bottom third as well. So I don't want any Julio Jones. I don't want the Steelers receivers. You know, the thing about Ben, and I feel pretty strongly about this, that you have three Steelers receivers who people are drafting in the fourth, fifth, sixth round areas. But you've got Ben, who's what? A consensus mid-20s quarterback? Well, something doesn't add up there. How can a quarterback whose scene is so bad be supporting three receivers in the 4, 5, 6 round range, three starting fantasy receivers? Something is off there. And I think what's off is Ben. And the reason for it, I think actually, we're going to blame Tom Brady for this. Tom Brady is a unicorn in terms of sustained success at an advanced age. And he has caused people to not realize that the normal trajectory for a quarterback is to be washed up in their late 30s. I think that's what Ben is, so I want no part of the Steelers receivers.
Yeah, I think you made a bunch of good points there. And again, as usual, I'm just going to underline just so people understand. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Nobody wants Ben Roethlisberger, but everybody wants the three receivers. And what's funny enough is, sure, each of those receivers will have weeks where they blow up. I mean, we already saw the upside of Chase Claypool. He's capable of multiple touchdown games. He reminds me of everything that we thought Mike Williams was going to be, the Chargers Mike Williams, as far as a go up and get it. But yeah, that there's something that doesn't add up there. It's interesting. You know, Deontay Johnson from a PPR perspective, I think he's going to regress, mostly because that's why they got Najee Harris, to involve him in the short passing game. I think you make a great point there too. And when you're talking about the other quarterbacks from Ben's draft class, I mean, Philip Rivers out of the league, Eli retired already. Yes, you cannot. Everyone, a common narrative to say, hey, look what Tom Brady's doing. No, Tom Brady lives a very unique lifestyle and is a unique player. So I think all those are good points. All right. Julio Jones, don't want him. One other person, you said the Steelers core. Let's go the other way. Who are players that you are proactively drafting? I know you named a couple already, you talked about Zach Moss, but who is someone in the first couple of rounds you just don't want to leave a draft without?
Well, I think that's hard when you preface it in the first couple of rounds, because you know, it can depend on where and around they are. Like, I really like, say, Terry McLaurin in early round three, but you can't say you're not going to leave a draft without him, because if you're happen to be drafting in the end of round three, then you're not going to get him. So I'd say that the easier way to answer that question is, who am I not going to leave a draft without, is by pointing to players a little bit in later rounds. And I'll give you another name that hasn't come up yet, who, when I get to round seven, I am actively looking for Trey Sermon. I it's like coded in me at this point in my best ball drafts. When I get to round seven, I'm searching to see if Trey Sermon's been taken or not, and I'm taking him if he's there, just about irrespective of what my draft build looks like. And he's another guy who fits with my zero RB strategy, by the way, too. Load up on those wide receivers in rounds two through six, and then Sermon in round seven. So much I like about his situation.
Yeah, I think that we were talking about, you know, I was talking with Alex at Roster Watch about this, and I think Trey Sermon's headed to the fifth round if you do a late August draft, for all the reasons. You know, I heard a good narrative about the San Francisco backfield, and I really, you know, you hear different theories out there. This one, and you ignore them, you read them on social media, but this one resonated was, you know, I don't think anyone doubts that Raheem Mostert is like this sports car, this fast running back that fits perfectly within Shanahan's system, similar to Matt Breida when he was at his peak, now on your Buffalo Bills. But they wanted a bigger bruising back, someone to soften up the defense a little bit. And again, I have no inside information, but I liked Sermon getting on the field early, softening up the defense. And right at the right moment, when the defense is on their heels, you might see Mostert, them go to him and try to house it. So I like Sermon as a seventh rounder if you can get him, but I think that those days are short-lived. I agree that, again, once again, you're head of the market here. I absolutely see him heading into that Myles Gaskin tier. All right. End game draft. This is my favorite. I love talking end game because it's only upside, right? I mean, these are like easy cuts at the end. And then, last year, The Geek, my broadcasting partner in DFS Army, he liked T. Higgins a lot, and I didn't. Obviously, I was wrong. He was a great end game guy. Who are some of the rookies or second year receivers who didn't show out in year one that you're interested in the double digit rounds, that you find yourself when you look at the percentage owned, that they're on a lot of your rosters? Who are your breakout hopefuls?
Well, you know, I actually, the way I like doing my roster builds, my breakout hopefuls tend to be not those receivers like the Jets rookie or guys like that. They tend to be more handcuff running back, or how could running back guys with upside who need an injury or something to work out, like Chuba Hubbard or Daronton Evans or Darrell Williams. I like building rosters like that. I think that everybody saw how Justin Jefferson exploded last year out of nowhere when he was basically undrafted in most leagues. And so that, I think that's built into ADPs now in terms of the rookie and second year receivers who are likely to do well. So my later round flyers tend to be those zero running back type setups, guys who I'm hoping will break out if an injury happens or things like that. I have lots of Pollard with Dallas. I have lots of Moss, as I've said. I have lots of those kind of handcuff type guys. Madison, you know, that's who I tend to be looking for in those types of rounds.
Yeah, the one injury away running backs are obviously, you know, that it's like storing this super this insurance policy. You know, it's and where are you? You talked about like specifically handcuffing, which obviously is the practice of taking the running back of the star running or the starting running back in on your own team. So if you have Zeke taking Pollard, I've heard a lot of debate about not taking your direct handcuff, taking someone else's handcuff to maximize your upside. Do you have a preference that way or does it matter? Go ahead. Let me hear you.
Very unequivocally, I do not want to take my own handcuff. I want to steal somebody else's handcuff because that's how you're maximizing your upside, right? I want to be able to stop there
and explain that. Explain why it's max. Like you hear it a lot, but I want to hear it fleshed out in an explanation. Why is that actually?
To win in a really competitive league, say a 12 team league with guys who really know what they're doing. I want to, if I have Christian McCaffrey at 1.1, I don't want to be taking Hubbard in round 14 and handcuffing him and burning a roster spot there. I'd rather be taking Darrell Williams and stealing the handcuff for CEH owners, or taking Madison and stealing Dalvin Cook's owner's handcuff. And because then if I own CMC at 1.1 and he pans out and Cook gets hurt and I've got Madison as the backup, then my team looks really terrific. To me, that's a winning formula. Whereas if you're taking the handcuff of the stud who you drafted yourself, then your upside is limited because you're using two roster spots to fill one starting lineup position, and you may never even use that handcuff. So aim for upside by taking somebody else's handcuff as opposed to your own.
Normally, the chat, I try to answer the chat questions as we go, not to interrupt the flow of our conversation, but every once in a while we get one that actually, kind of resonates, and I'm curious of your opinion here. We have one here. I'm going to put it up on the screen. This is even if you're listening on the podcast, on the audio cast, Elena Jack said, no matter what your strategy is there a part of the draft? Just talk about traditional snake one QB where if Mahomes is there, you're not passing on him. Even, you and I are similar that we're letting someone else take Mahomes. We're probably, I don't know about Josh Allen for you. You might have to do that, but we're in a one QB format. We're going to let the first few stud quarterbacks go. Where's the round where you're just taking Mahomes? You're not thinking about it.
I'd say if he gets into round five, that gets really hard to pass because by that point, the stud wide receivers in round four, like the Amari Coopers who might fall into four, are taken. And so when you get into five, that's where I think it'd be hard to pass on a Mahomes or Allen or somebody like that.
Yeah, I said the middle or end of round four, so we're similar to you because that's where it starts to break off. You brought up Amari Cooper. Any concerns about him? Because he was one of my favorite value wide receivers. Now that CeeDee Lamb is now on the 2-3 turn, his ADP in NFFC has gone up to pick 23. So obviously I'm being priced out of CeeDee Lamb for my tastes and values. Amari Cooper, any issues with him right now as his ADP falls solidly into the fifth round?
No, he had a plantar fasciitis foot issue a couple of seasons ago and sat out training camp just like he has been here and came back just fine. The reports I've read on him seem like he's fine, and I want all the Dallas combinations that I can get. So if Cooper is falling into early round four, I'm saying thank you very much and hitting the draft button.
Okay, another offseason argument I need you to settle, Stopa, is I don't know if you followed the Beat Chris List draft that we did on the NFFC. Dalton Del Don of Yahoo and Chris List were fighting over Travis Etienne taking him in the third round. For me, this is I understand it. It's an upside pick, but my good friend at Byron at Roster Watch has his boots on the ground in Jaguars camp this week, and he said, there is no doubt by his observations that James Robinson is the starting running back on that team. So parse out the Jaguars backfield, because right now James Robinson's being drafted with all those other one injury away guys, the AJ Dillons, Tony Pollards. He, by the look of it, maybe in that running back dead zone of Miles Gaskin on them. So give me your take on the Jaguars backfield.
I've been mostly fading that because it just seems like a weird situation that I haven't been able to fully wrap my mind around, that there's just so much newness there between the new quarterback, the new coaching staff, that the Urban Meyer takes drafts ETN. I wouldn't have done that in the first place. So what's his role going to be? In minicamp, he started out lining up at wide receiver. It all just seems very odd to me. So I've been just kind of staying away from that. It also feels like the Jaguars have a lot of mouths to feed. The fact that we're even talking about this, you know, scares me away, certainly from Etienne in round three. I did hear Liz say, you know, I thought it was a good point to say it wouldn't be surprising to see him be taken, you know, as one of the first overall running backs in next year's drafts. I can see that possibility, that's not something I'm betting on when I'm drafting. But I haven't been taking Robinson either. It just, I don't know. I don't feel comfortable with that situation. And that has me leaning towards the receivers who I feel a lot of confidence in. And that's been what I've been doing.
All right. So let me ask you like this. If you and I were to, if I was to force you to make a $100 bet, who's going to have more fantasy PPR points through the first 5 weeks of the season, Travis Etienne or James Robinson, you're forced to bet. Which side are you betting on at even odds?
In PPR, I'd say Etienne. In standard, I'd say Robinson. So how's that for hedging?
That is a terrible answer, just so you know. Mark Stolpe, any other guys that you want to touch on before we wrap up? Any other particular players that you want to
tell? Trey Young, I mentioned Trey Sermon. I really like the Niners setup. Their schedule, it can be speculative to talk about schedules, but their schedule looks really fantastic. Their fantasy playoff schedule looks really fantastic. I like the reviews that I'm seeing out of camp about Young, and I can just kind of see those graphics like Trey
Sermon. You keep talking Atlanta Falcons star Trey Young. It's Trey Sermon. You're talking about Trey Sermon, right?
Both. I want the rookie quarterback and the rookie
running back. Trey Lance.
I'm sorry.
There you go. Yeah. There's a lot of good trays in fantasy sports nowadays.
My bad on that. I want both Niners rookies because that I just love the setup there. They both have so much upside. The schedule is so good. They're due for some positive injury regression. I want both of those guys. I can just kind of see the visuals midseason that the Niners are, 7-2 or something, and both trays are leading them there. So I want to get some of those, especially in Superflex.
A player that, if they break out, will surprise everybody, but not you.
Mike Williams, that he has a thousand yard season on his resume and a 10 touchdown season. I wouldn't be surprised to see him do both this year, especially with Justin Herbert having a better offensive line in his second year. Mike Williams is going to break out.
A player that you planted the flag for a couple of years ago that just hasn't done it, but you're not ready to unplant that flag for them. You know, you're still going to truther for them.
Gosh, I don't know if I have anybody like that. Maybe Josh Allen. I'm never going to unplant the flag on him.
He has done it quite well. So that is again you're allowed two terrible answers per podcast. You've crushed this podcast. You've spit fire. You've given us auction strategy. You've told us about how to play the QBs. How you're not passing on wide receiver talent, elite talent for running backs that you don't believe in. So you are entitled to say Josh Allen is a player that hasn't done it yet. Okay. Especially since you're wearing his jersey. Mark Stoba, let's give you a plug. We're going to pivot away from fantasy football a little bit here just to talk about your book for just briefly, People v. Money. If I was standing next to you at an elevator and I said, "Hey, Mark, what's your book about?" and you have 30 seconds till the elevator door closes, what would you tell me?
I'd say that our financial system is completely broken. People are starting to see that with COVID. I actually wrote my book before COVID, but we are endlessly funding money to the rich, endlessly transferring wealth upwards. And we as a society need to be able to see that and to join forces to stop it so that the bottom 90% can have a better lifestyle. People v. Money is the future. Let's all get on board.
I highly recommend getting the book. If you don't like to read like me, if you like to listen to books, it's amazing too. You can write that. Who is that read that book? Didn't you have someone? Isn't there an audio version of your book as well?
It's a paid actor who does the audio.
Version. He is good. I would say it's a good read.
Far better than I could have done. So
I was about to say. Obviously, I wanted to hear your voice tracking the book, but you pick the right actor. It's a pleasant listen.
If you want to hear my voice, invite me back here, and I'll give you lots more crappy answers.
No, you were on fire today. Give out your Twitter.
At Mark Stopa.
Yeah, at Mark Stopa. It's MarkStopa, right?
You got it.
Yeah, yeah. Easy. He's a great follow in fantasy football. And, you know, I hope you don't mind if I plug your Facebook. If you want to hear more about his adventures, and he talks about, you know, his book and the rich funneling money away from everybody else, that's more of his Facebook stuff. But again, if you just want the fantasy football stuff, I hope I didn't overstep a line here by telling people to check out your Facebook stuff. I think it's interesting.
Not at all. I try to spread a message on Facebook that hopefully resonates with people. And I think in the next decade, people are going to see how the elites and the system of government just don't work to support the people. And we've got to be able to stop being partisan and join forces to take back our world and our lifestyle. So I talk about some of that on Facebook regularly.
Cool. All right. And I'm at Alan Cislowski. Of course, sign up for DFS Army. Use code SEZ, S-E-Z, get VIP, 10% off right now. And until next time, Mark Stopa, we'll have you back real soon. We'll see everybody in next week with another podcast. Bye-bye.